Ready? Sir Laughs a Lot?
I'm ready. So, did I tell you I almost hit a cat on the way up here today?
No, you didn't. You almost hit a cat?
Yeah. I was leaving the neighborhood, and it just kind of darted. It semi-darted up the, in the middle of the street. And it gave me like this nasty scowl, like I was doing something to it. Like, I almost did something to it.
Like you almost hit me.
Yeah, it
what
almost hit
me. What the f*** wrong with you?
Good thing is, though, it wasn't black. It was like a grayish color.
So you heard that new Lorde remix?
I have not.
The Royals last one in 85. Most of his team was not alive. It's pre-iPhone. The uniforms were baby blue. And topping the charts was a band called A-ha. And the players were Charlie Lee, Brent Quisenberry pitched, George Brett, Frank White, Sabre, Heron Cook, Bianca Lana, and Gubigzah. Now they got Kane, Aoki, a Herrera, and a Crow, Finnegan, Ventura, and a bunch of other players that I don't know. Who's Christian Colon? I don't know any Royal. Are they still in KC? Is Whitey Herzog still there? He's chubby with white hair. I don't know any Royal. But I'll grab a beer and watch. Oh, and I'll cheer for what's his face and that guy there. The box score starts right now.
So that was the Lorde remix that really encapsulates the Royals' trip to the World Series, if you ask me.
Yeah, and it's definitely that time of season in the baseball season for a casual fan like myself. I'm going to start watching now. I think the World Series is upon us. So go Royals. And who are they playing?
It's the Giants. It's the Royals and Giants.
Oh, that's right. So first time in... I don't know how many years, but two wildcard teams are into the series. So.
They just started doing the wildcard play-in, though. Like, it hasn't. It's not like that's been decades ago or something, right? That's recent.
No, so I think maybe the last 10 years or so. So it's been a while, but yeah, two wildcard series teams, or two wildcard teams, and I think it says a lot as far as being a team that played your way through and just kind of, you know, getting geared up instead of just really resting on your laurels.
For sure. Before we forget, let's go ahead and get some housekeeping out of the way. Welcome to the next installment of your favorite sports podcast, maybe even your favorite podcast in general. It is Monday, October the 20th. We are the FCK Pod, and this is data that we wrote back the 3rd to the 10th.
Yeah, October 3rd through the 10th. It's a little backlog, but you know, we want to, and we're gonna blend in a little bit of more relevant information as well. But for the most part, this is all stuff that we, news that we put together for that particular week, and then we'll just kind of take it from there.
But we have something exciting for y'all today, since this is our World Series preview episode. We have actually from the heart of America,
God's country,
the KC masterpiece himself, Mr. Kojak Delta.
Well, things have apparently went in the way of my city, because who would have figured the Royals would make the World Series? I mean, let's be serious. Make the playoffs was really the biggest thing that could have happened. Like, oh, they made it. That's cool. The A's will probably beat you. Hold on. The A's didn't beat you? Okay. You playing the number one team in Major League Baseball in the Angels. Cool. What? You swept them? Huh. That's interesting. Okay. You playing the Orioles, the team who you shouldn't have had any luck with, because you didn't have enough pitching to get through those batters, because Detroit didn't have enough pitching to get through them. And somehow, they swept the Orioles. Awkward, but can we say the Kansas City Royals are going to the World Series? And I mean, dude, it's the Royals. And I want to say, these O's ain't loyal. Hey. But it was a great shirt, and Jeremy Guthrie should never really apologize for that. For what? You don't live in Baltimore. You play for Kansas City. Nobody cares about them. That's the problem with baseball. Well, it's a whole different subject. But I will say is that these are the greatest times in the city. I mean, I can tell you right now, we are celebrating. People are not going to work. I'm telling you right now, they win the World Series, Kansas City will be shut down for a good 2 days. Parade and all. No lie. Kansas City, stand up. We are in the building. The world is going to recognize we bring championships back. The mainstream is coming back to the Midwest. It's not just Kansas City. We got Iowa, all the other surrounding states. I can't really name them all right now. All of them are literally going for the Royals. You know what? The Royals will probably sweep. The Giants will probably going to win their series. And they're going to basically have all the playoff records. So, and who would have guessed that? Not only you make the playoffs, you breaking records as you go. Kane is a beast. Player to look out for next year. And that dude, Hosmer Mukoskis, dude, they're going to be something if we keep them. Because don't forget, if the Royals win the World Series, they will not be keeping nobody because we are a cheap city. I'm telling you right now, you can look from the Chiefs to any team we had here, we trade everybody away. It's ridiculous. I don't know why, but it happens. But I was going to say, we'll probably sweep the Giants, but we're not going to sweep St. Louis only because I feel like we're so close to home. That would be, I don't know, it's like a comfort. You know, you get too comfortable, you know what I mean? Like, the Royals have been playing somewhat semi on the edge, but more like, would we have a lose feeling? Whereas if they're playing in St. Louis, we'd be like, oh, we're still at home, but you're not at home. So, hopefully play the Giants, get that sweep. Probably going to win in San Francisco, you know, game four. And what can I say? World Series MVP? It's probably going to be either Kane or one of the relievers. Because my God, the relievers, them are killing it. That's who's helping us. From six and on, you ain't getting jack. Bruh. Love it. So, hey, Royals, World Series, MLB playoffs. Who figured?
So, big shout out to Kojak Delta for being the first to accept the challenge of being a, having a guest appearance for the podcast. TJ gives us, you know, good material, but Kojak, we reached out to him because he's from the Midwest and his Royals got into the World Series, so we are more than happy to get him to drop a little segment there for us, talking about, his team and their, to me, honestly, in a pretty improbable run into the World Series.
Oh, absolutely improbable. And yeah, big shouts out to Kojak, man. We appreciate you dropping a little guest feature for us. That's not taken away from Mr. Peacock. We still love you, man. I just listened to the Square Plays today, as a matter of fact. And maybe we'll get back to that. Improbable, I would agree. The only thing that I would be cautious of going into next year, let's go ahead and assume the Kansas City sweeps. Let's go ahead and assume that they sweep the Giants and go ahead and win all the way out, set all the records, and all is gravy. However, next year, they have quite a few names that are coming up due. It looks like they were on rookie deals because they were getting paid next to nothing. Lorenzo Cain, who Kojak just shouted out and said to make sure you look out for him next year.
Yeah, he's a rookie. I think he's a rookie this year.
Word, yeah. He was on a one-year $500,000 deal. Mike Moustakas as well. Ooh, and be on the lookout for him for sure because he's a Scott Boras affiliate.
So he's gonna go get that money,
right? Yeah, he's gonna command quite a bit. And then they have a few other holes that are gonna come up. Raul Ibanez, but he's more or less an aging DH at this point. Aoki's coming up due, and James Shields, their ace, is a free agent next year. So
yeah, and I mean, you know, I'd be okay with that. If you come home with the series, then you blow the team up, man. Like I said, having been a Braves fan, for the better part of 15 plus years. I honestly would have been okay if they would have went the role of the route of the Marlins and, you know, just strike when the iron's hot, come away with a couple of World Series rings, and just blow the roster up every year afterwards. I mean, you got the trophies in the cabinet.
Yeah, we're about to see that come to fruition too. I got a real strong feeling. I mean, the thing with baseball is that whatever team gets hot at the end of the year, they stand a really good chance of winning the series that year. It was proven incorrect the year that the Rockies faced off against the Rockies were super hot that year. Tulowitzki was a second year player, I want to say. This is back in 07, but they ran into that buzzsaw known as the Boston Red Sox and got it handed to them. But typically any hot team winds up just rolling through the playoffs.
Yeah, and it makes a lot of sense. You know, you kind of get that, playoff mentality ready. You know, you kind of get yourself warmed up, and you hit the ground running where these other teams may be a little bit flat footed going into the playoffs.
Word, but shouts out to the Midwest, man, and big shout out to small market teams, because I want to say that the Royals are 19th on the list as far as payroll goes, and they're in the World Series with authority, you know, sweeping their way in essentially. And yeah, they're number 19 out of 30 with a payroll less than $100 million, $92 million payroll.
Yeah, and you know, the funny thing is, let's tie this in with the Braves. Dayton Moore, former staff of front office staff of the Braves, and he's being considered or being talked about as being a potential GM replacement in Atlanta if they decide to try to go and grab somebody outside of the organization. One other thing that I wanted to mention, talking about Lorenzo Cain, big shout out. He's from Valdosta, Georgia.
Oh, no joke.
Yeah, so he was originally drafted by the Brewers in the 17th round. So he came up through the Brewers minor league system. He played in the majors for a little bit with them, and then he was traded in 2010 to the Royals. It was a part of the big deal that went to Milwaukee, getting Zach Greinke. So
word, which is a huge deal back then, and I don't even think, is Greinke still on the team?
No, he's. I think he went to the Angels. He was one of the big money signings there with the Anaheim Angels of Anaheim, or Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim.
The Anaheim Angels of Los Angeles.
Something like that. LA Angels.
The thing with baseball, man, I used to love baseball. I was a diehard fan for so long. But I found that in my advanced age, I just didn't have time for it, man. Like, it's so much of a time commitment for 100. It's a long season. And don't get me wrong, man, I like to keep tabs on the Braves. And, you know, I like to keep up with the team and catch a game whenever I'm in Atlanta or if they're in Seattle. You know, I try to go out of my way to check them out. But I'm just disenchanted with baseball altogether, man. They need to do something to fix it.
Well, you nailed it, you know, the nail on the head there, talking about the 162 games. We joked about it, about how they start playing like around Valentine's Day. The baseball season actually starts about a month after that. So it's about March.
Pitchers and catchers report right after Valentine's Day.
Yeah. I mean, you know, right after they get into their box of chocolates and, you know, whatever other activities may be going on, then they go off to Florida for to start reporting for spring training. I mean, we're getting into October now. I mean, it's that's 7 months, man.
Word. And you know, I think a lot of it had to do with I was playing fantasy baseball every year, man, and it's a task. And when I finally gave it up, I realized that, it was easier to be a Braves fan, and maybe that was part of it, though, because it was easier to then not keep up so much, so many tabs on the league, trying to keep up with fantasy stats, changing out your roster every day. You know, it just became more of a grind than a fun activity for me.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it definitely, like you said, over the course of a regular season, it's just so much to take in. One thing that that I heard recently, probably last week at some point, they were talking about how, you know, they're questioning, well, what's the value of a manager, you know, during the regular season? I mean, because I don't think you can undervalue. I don't think you can overvalue a manager's role in a seven-game series once you get into the playoffs. But when you're talking about over the course of 162 games, it's hard to see what kind of impact that the manager will be having, because you have so many steps along the way that, you know, a batting order change, you know, any kind of lineup change may not show any, you know, changes in, you know, tangible results for, you know, 10 games.
But you can mismanage and lose a game. I mean, I've seen Freddy Gonzalez do it time and time again, you know, where he should have made a pitching substitution, or, man, I can't even think of examples right off the top of my head, but you can lose a game with bad management as well, you know, if you're not on top of it during the game itself. And I guess the point is that 162 games, how much difference is it really going to make? You know, maybe the second half of the season, you know, like that matters more. But yeah, so one other name that just popped up off the list and jumped up at me, Hosmer is actually, he's due for arbitration next year, and he also happens to be signed with Scott Boras's talent agency. So look out for a huge, huge negotiation there, man. That's Hosmer's legit.
Yeah, so I mean, if it's two things that I've learned through this exercise of talking about the Royals, one, I don't know any Royals, and two, I'm just not that interested in baseball, man. I'm going to watch the World Series just because it should be interesting, and there's, you know, there's a lot of good storyline as far as the two wild card teams and the small, generally speaking, smaller market teams. I mean, I think I still consider the Giants a fairly, maybe a middle market, you know, kind of team. They definitely don't shell out the bucks like their SoCal, you know, counterparts in LA and Anaheim. So,
to give a little more context, the Giants operated with $154 million payroll last year, so they do shell it out. They're number seven on the list.
Okay, I take that back. I didn't realize they put out that kind of cheese.
Right below the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim at $155 million. And so far, the king of the crown, I think for the past few years, actually, the past 4 years at least, the Los Angeles Dodgers have shelled out 200 plus. They're 235 right now.
I am really surprised that the Giants have put out that much money, because you don't see, it's not like they have any slouches on the team really, so it doesn't sound like they're on the cheap. But I mean, outside of guys like they're basically their starting pitching between Bumgarner, Kane.
Lincecum's still on a
big payroll, you know, big number salary cap wise. I mean, who are their big ticket guys on that are batters? I mean, you got, I'm sure they probably had to lock up Posey on a big deal.
Hey, stat guy, can you check on that for us?
Who else would they have?
Thanks. Buster Gonad, Buster Posey, 18.5 mil. Matt Cain, 25.5 mil.
There you go.
Hunter Pence, 18 mil.
Ooh.
The walking oxymoron, Angel Pagan, Angel Pagan, 10 million. Lincecum's on $17.5 million, Peavy's at $14.5 million, and Huddy's making $11.5 million.
All right, so they do have a lot of. Okay, I take that back. It never really seemed like they were shelling out major bucks, but I stand corrected because they've spent more so far than the Angels have, and the Angels have thrown money around.
Yo,
dudes, they got Pujols on that untradeable deal. They got
Kemp.
What's his face? The former Rangers outfielder.
Cruz?
No, what's his name? The drug addict. Not drug
Ron Washington?
No, besides Ron Washington. He's like an outfielder. Anyway, they got two really bloated contracts on aging players that they will not be able to trade. So, to me, it just always seemed like the Angels were right there behind the Dodgers as far as just throwing money around New York Yankees style.
And you want to hear something that'll blow your mind? Mad Bum is only making $7 million, and he's locked up until 2019.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
They got him. Yeah, that's a cap-friendly deal right there.
They got him for the low. So Andre Ethier, Matt Kemp, and Carl Crawford are the three Los Angeles Dodgers outfielders.
The Angels.
Oh, the Angels. My bad. Yeah. But while we're here, Greinke's making $26 million.
I don't blame Milwaukee for trading him. You can't. You just, you know, unless you're a major market team, you can't afford that, man. You just can't. How much are the Braves, you know, spending? Maybe $100 million? That's a quarter of the salary right there.
Right.
That's insane. And, I mean, don't get me wrong. I remember Greinke being an above-average pitcher, but really, $25 million? Come on.
Shouts out to Timmy, Tim Hudson, getting paid down there in the Bay.
Yeah, keep doing your thing. Back in the Bay Area.
Josh Hamilton, there I think, is the dude. 17.4 mil.
And I think he, like, struck out a whole bunch. He did not show up for the playoffs this year. So.
But his WAR is 2.23 on the season. That's pretty good, man. Hey. It's not bad.
Regular season. That's over with, though. You got to produce in the postseason, man. You got to be like more like Eli Manning, not much like Peyton Manning.
For sure. But shouts out to the Midwest, man. This coming on the heels of the routing that the Kansas City Royals had put on, or not Kansas City Royals, Kansas City Chiefs had put on the New England Patriots. We alluded to it last podcast.
Yeah, let's just tap right into that NFL since we're since you mentioned it. We mentioned it previously about how the question was starting to come up: is Tom Brady done? Are the Patriots and that Bill Belichick, Tom Brady era finally coming to a close? This was based on the absolute throttling that they took at the hands of the Chiefs in Week 4.
41-17?
41-14.
41-14. And Brady, 14. Brady got benched. Brady was removed from the game.
Yeah, I mean, it was just an ugly game overall. Let me pull up this. Let me pull up that box score right quick, just to give a better idea of how thorough of a beatdown that was. As if a 27-point victory wasn't enough.
And I honestly felt that we were seeing the changing of the guard, because Belichick and Brady have been so good for pretty much the past decade.
Oh, for sure, they've owned that. They've owned that that division. You know, that's for sure.
Arguably the AFC East is pretty wide open this year. You know, the Bills are an up-and-coming team. Shouts out to Mr. Frosty.
Get on the podcast, man.
Yeah, what up? Mr. Kojak Delta beat you to the punch, man. What's happening? The Dolphins surprisingly look pretty good against the Packers. They should have won that game. But Aaron Rodgers, man, ice water in that dude's veins.
Keep it working out with Hans and Franz.
Exactly,
getting
man.
A swole on.
The Jets, not so much. They're still... The J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets.
Yeah. So in this game, you know, looking at just the basic stat line, Brady didn't look bad. I mean, 14 of 23 threw a touchdown. And
how many picks?
Let me pull that up, because it doesn't show that on NFL.com.
One of which was a pick six.
Yeah, they only show the positives. He threw two picks that game.
One of which was a pick six.
There you go. So he threw two touchdowns, one to the right team, one to the wrong team. So, I mean, it was just bad. You know, maybe it was... You know, the defense allowed Mr. Game Manager himself, Alex Smith, to go 20 of 26 and throw three touchdowns. I mean, it really looked like you said, it looked like the beginning of the end for that that Pats dynasty that has been a mainstay in the AFC playoffs, in the Super Bowl, and definitely dominating that division. I mean, for the better part of 10 years. I mean, they've owned that division. You know, for quite some time.
So fast forward to October the 5th, which, what was the date on? That was a Thursday night game versus the Chiefs,
this was a
right?
Thursday night game. I'll get the exact date for you.
So fast forward a little bit. It was a few days. I thought it was a Sunday, so it was a short week.
Yeah, hold on just one second. So then the following week, they played the Bengals on the 5th.
What date was the Chiefs game?
The Chiefs game was September 29th. It was a Monday night game, then they went into a Sunday on the
5th. Okay, so short week, six-day week, and then they came out and put 43 points up on the Bengals, which is a good defense. That's a good team, if you ask me.
You know, man.
They had a point to prove.
Be honest with you, though, and maybe we could talk about the Bengals in that same situation that we just talked about with the with the Patriots. The Bengals was that was a team that was a lot of favorites to be like kind of that dark horse Super Bowl team. They got a lot of talent. I mean, they got a really good defense. They got a young, you know, and developing offense with Andy Dalton and our boy AJ Green. You know, the Giovanni Bernard at running back looks legit. That defense is what really caught everybody's attention, to be honest with you. And then they go ahead and give up 43 points,
man.
You know, to the Patriots. So, you know, the question now is, you know, what are the Bengals going to be doing now?
I don't know, but shout out to Robert Deathers, former Georgia Bulldog. He's on the defense. Dunlap. Carlos Dunlap played at Auburn, I want to say.
I thought he was a gay tour.
He was an SEC dude.
Yeah, he's an SEC guy, but...
Geno Atkins.
Former
he's
dog.
A boss. That's a good team, man. That's a good defense.
It is. I mean, if you look at the roster, man, you shouldn't really be giving up 43 points on a relatively short week to the Patriots that were, before that, looked like shit.
Man, Tom Brady was mad, though. He was mad. He came out, because there was a lot of talk about he's done. He's done. Cut him off your fantasy team.
And a lot of people that I knew did release him outright after that week. And then people were probably scrambling to pick him right back up.
Exactly. Some clever dude that was like, somebody cut Tom Brady. Let me go ahead and swoop. 292 yards and 2 touchdowns against the Bengals.
Nice little comeback game. And, of course, you know, that hasn't seemed to slow down at all. He's, you know, they're looking good again. You know, they're looking, you know, as of, you know, this week, you know, they just finished beating the Jets 27 to 25. They're 5-2 and they're in their usual spot, first place in the AFC East, man.
So, however, that Jets game, you know, I was just kind of poo-pooing the Jets there. The Jets should have won that game. The Patriots blocked the field goal to win.
Right. Yeah, no, it kind of raises that question mark again. Yeah, because like you said, you're at home versus the Jets. The Jets look like a mess, and that really shouldn't have been all that close.
Speaking of the Jets, did you hear that they added their third Wildcat quarterback to the roster?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they just traded for Percy Harvin.
That's right. Are they in talks to grab Pat White?
I heard that they're going to give Rich Rod a call and maybe try to lure him out of that Arizona job.
There you go. They're just gonna install a Wildcat offense and just go nuts. But, hey, you know, look, man, we talked about this, you know, in passing. How bad of a locker room guy can you be to just get removed from two teams,
man,
in the prime of your career? I mean, you're like in the physical prime of your NFL career right now.
I heard he was going to get cut. If they didn't receive a trade offer, they were just going to outright cut him.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Because he's a mad he's an extremely talented player.
To quote Leon from Above the Rim, all that talent, no heart.
Apparently, he has had some real issues inside of the locker room, like, you know, just getting into arguments with other teammates and stuff like that. So.
Straight up deactivating himself from 3 games last year. Like, he wasn't hurt that whole time. The dude's a basket case.
Yeah, apparently so. And you know what? You know, best of luck to you, Percy Harvin. But, I mean, it doesn't look like, you know, it doesn't look like things are going to end well for him. So, I mean, and if you can't stay down in Minnesota and Seattle, good luck trying to stay out, you know, stay out of the limelight now that you're in, you know, under the bright lights of New York. I mean, that's just adding to the entire circus, you know, that the Jets are running right now.
So I like the way you broke it down over Google chat a couple days ago when the story broke. I want to say it was Friday. So the Seattle Seahawks, basically, they traded a first round and a fourth round pick to Minnesota to acquire Percy Harvin. What was that, 3 years ago? 2 years ago?
Maybe 2 years ago.
Two years ago, they received from the Jets a conditional mid-round pick. So basically, it's not going to be a first or second round. It will be third or later, right?
Right.
So they basically gave up a first and fourth, got back a third. So they gave up 1 draft pick and 2 years of guaranteed money. Did we look up how much? Hey, Stat Guy, can you look that up?
Yeah, they gave up a lot of because the year after they traded for him, they signed him to like a 6-year deal for some pretty major money, and about half of it was guaranteed. So not only is Seattle cutting bait with basically a first-round pick, I mean, the seventh-round pick is just, you know, filler anyway, but you gave up a first-round pick and some serious cash to a player that you decided that he's not worth keeping around after year 3 or after, you know, finishing out year 3.
So in 2013, he made 2.5 base with a $2.4 million signing bonus. So that was when they acquired him from Minnesota.
Right.
Seattle paid a base salary of $6.5 million last year. He signed a 6-year, $64.25 million contract with the Jets.
What the hell? Look, the thing is, like we said, he's a really talented player. He really is. He's dynamic.
He is.
You know, he's probably – he would give – to be honest with you, I think he would give Devin Hester a run for the money for the most dangerous return player, for sure.
You think Dante Hall's pissed off that his name never comes up anymore?
I love Dante Hall.
the X-Man.
Back to Kansas City, man. He starred on those Chiefs teams.
He starred on my Madden team, man.
Yeah.
He was a beast.
99 speed.
What did Vic from NorCal say about the Percy Harvin deal?
Oh, man.
He basically said, like, I don't know how it's going to work in real life, but that's a cold-ass Madden team.
Yeah, talking about the guys that are on there, talking about Vic and Harvin.
CJ2K.
Yeah, I mean, that's that's a you're trying to put together a 4x100 relay team right there, man.
Man, Percy got a $12 million signing bonus, 14.5 guaranteed. That's insane. That is insane. To go, Jets.
Yeah, for a guy that he missed all of 2013, well, except for the very last few games, and then of course the playoff run, because he was rehabbing. Like a shoulder injury, and then he
deactivated himself out of three games. To correct myself, I said last year he made $6.5 million. He made that this year, 2014, $6.5 million.
Yeah, and he suffers from migraines as well. So I mean, it's just, you know what I'm saying. It just doesn't. Now that we kind of put all the facts out there, he doesn't really look like he's worth that effort. And maybe Seattle did the right thing there, and you know, saying, hey, you know what, the first round pick, it's really not worth what, you know, all this, you know, that's being talked about.
You know who Minnesota took? They wound up getting Jerick McKinnon with their first round pick, and Xavier Rhodes with the fourth.
Worked out okay for them.
Jerick McKinnon, Georgia State, Georgia Southern.
I think Georgia Southern.
Yeah,
one of those division or FCS teams, rather.
He was the fantasy waiver ad 2 weeks ago when he beat up, blew up against the Falcons.
Yeah, I was gonna say, he did okay with the against the Falcons.
I told everyone to calm down because he ran all over a terrible Falcons team, and then put up some numbers again last week. So, needless to say, I went ahead and picked him up off of waivers.
Nice move,
Georgia Southern. There you go. The Eagles.
Finishing out with the Jets talk while we're on it, Rex Ryan wins the Captain Obvious Award of this week for his comments on October 7th, and I quote, "You're right. If that's the case and we don't get this thing on the right track, I don't think for a minute I'll be here." I mean, that's just stating the obvious to me, you know, talking about the mess that the Jets are. You know, of course you're going to be let go. I mean, I think he's on borrowed time as it is. I don't think he's going to make it, you know, past this season. I think the Rex Ryan experiment is done.
And for the record, Rob Ryan's my favorite of the Ryan brothers.
I like the long hair.
Long hair, don't care. Gone gray, don't
I
care.
Like his bangs.
So you want to go ahead and move into college football?
Let's do that, man. Let's. There's a lot of stuff that we could talk about. Let's get the national type of stuff out of the way, and then we'll get into the regional stuff. So
this week was the catastrophic week of losses, and I think Tim D-O-double-G, shout out to Timmy, he encapsulated it with an image that he posted to Twitter, I want to say, that basically said LMAO with the following logos, LSU, what was the M? Shit, I should have looked this up before I did this, but...
Was it the M from Texas A&M?
Probably, I don't know. I couldn't tell you. Let me look it up. But the A and the O were Alabama and Oregon.
Yeah, I mean, what it all amounts to, this is basically one of those, you know, one of those shake-up weeks where half of the top 10 lost. We already talked about how Oregon had lost when we last recorded. They were then ranked number 2. Alabama decided to join that party. They were ranked 3rd before they lost. Oklahoma thought it was a good idea. They fall right behind them. They were 4th. Texas A&M, the 6th place team, also lost. And then UCLA, to round things off, was the 8th ranked team, and they also went down. So, I mean, it was just upheaval all over the top 10. This was the week that Mississippi State beat Alabama and overtook Florida State for the number 1 overall ranking. Another little tidbit there, after Arizona beat Oregon, was it Oregon?
Yeah, Rich Rod beat Oregon Thursday night. We mentioned it on the last episode.
After that win, they're the first team two have gone unranked, straight into the top 10. They were ranked, they were 26th going in, and then after that big win, they jumped all the way up to 10th place on that win. So overall, just a really hectic, hectic weekend and overall week that led off with that Oregon loss.
I can't believe that they jumped in the top 10, man. That's such, I don't know what happened there, man, but it took them a Hail Mary to beat Cal.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it's early. You know, we could talk about the validity of these early season rankings and what can be done to try to fix all that. I've got some ideas myself, you know, some things that are probably, have already been discussed, in other, other mainstream media. But I think a lot of these rankings, I mean, it doesn't really amount to much, man, other than just inflating rankings. I mean, if anything, I'll just dive into it real quick. They ought to look at where are the teams, how many top 25 teams did they beat at the end of the season? You know, like where were they ranked at the end of the year? To kind of give a little bit more validity to, you know, to beating those teams instead of just saying, well, you know, they were ranked top 10 during week 4 and 5.
So the M in the, I don't know what you call that, a GIF, an image, was Michigan. And I didn't think they were still relevant in college football at all. So
are they still playing?
Sorry to sidetrack that.
Still playing college football? You're not talking about Michigan State?
Nah, man, I'm talking about Big Blue.
Hey, do you know Derek Jeter retired?
Oh, yeah? Did you hear about Todd Gurley?
Man. October 9th.
Yeah, that was the big story of the week, if you ask me, man.
Yeah. That was... Andy Staples is the one that that broke the whole thing. And I'll just read this real quick. SI.com learned that a person confirmed to Georgia's compliance office this week, the week of the 3rd through the 10th, that this person had paid Todd Gurley $400 to sign 80 items in the springtime. The person claimed to have a photo, video, footage of Gurley signing items, but neither the photo nor the video showed money changing hands. So basically you've got, what amounts to video of a black player that looks like Todd Gurley.
Man, see, here's the thing.
With some hand exchanging, but we don't know exactly what went on.
For one, stop snitching. For two, the video, which isn't even confirmed, like, right, that it's Todd Gurley, because it shows an African-American male, who knows if he's an athlete, maybe he had an athletic build, with dreadlocks, exchanging merchandise.
Something.
But no money changed hands. Well, here's what we know. An African-American male, athletic build with dreadlocks, congratulations, genius. You just named 65% of the population in the state of Georgia.
Pretty much. He could have been in the SWATs that day, and you couldn't have picked the dude out from a lineup if you tried.
I bet you could drive for 15 minutes in Southwest Atlanta and pick out 7 dudes with dreadlocks and an athletic build.
What they say? What did Denzel say in Hurricane? Anyone will do.
Pretty much.
I mean, it's just, bottom line is, okay, so this all breaks down. Whether or not there's confirming evidence or not, Georgia, in typical Georgia fashion, and honestly, I was upset. I was really mad when this happened. But they went ahead and suspended Gurley indefinitely because of this. They didn't wait for – this was even before the NCAA even opened up an investigation, let alone started, talking about sanctions. To this day, sanctions have not even been discussed.
Right. It was just a self-policing measure.
Yeah, and we're known for doing that, we being Georgia. Georgia's known for doing that.
For sure. And it's a move to then, go ahead and try to, in case some indisputable evidence shows that they can get time served, or hopefully get time served if no indisputable evidence shows, they can hopefully get time served and get Gurley back for the SEC championship and then the playoffs.
I mean, here's the thing. When you look at the NCAA guidelines on how you want to discipline a player for this type of action. The amount of money that's being discussed is $400. It's under the NCAA's guidelines. It's a 2-game suspension, and of course you pay back all the money, so on and so on. But as far as games missed, it's 2 games. So as of today, Gurley has already missed 2 games. He did not play against Missouri, which was an absolute rout on the side of, you know, in the favor of Georgia.
Man, hats off to Coach Richt and Pruitt for getting the team together, getting them up for that game, and the defense finally decided to show up that game.
The defense, that's the first time that we've ever pitched a shutout against a top 25 team at, you know, on the road, I think, in quite some time, if ever.
The defense was lights out, but I think it was also a combination of our defense playing incredible and Matty Mock playing like ass.
Well, you know, that's one thing that I'm starting to see a lot about, you know, a lot of discussion is how Coach Pruitt, he's been under fire, you know, early on in the season, and you can probably look back, you know, by the time this season's over with, we're going to look at this Missouri game and see this as a probable turning point, because this is really, this is 2 weeks in a row now, because then against Arkansas, even though the final score line shows that it was like, what, like maybe within 2 scores, game was out of hand. I mean, Georgia had that game won handily before they scored some garbage, you know, touchdowns late.
They wound up scoring 13 points in the third and the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
So it really wasn't, the score wasn't indicative. I turned it off at the half. I was watching it super late after that heartbreaking Notre Dame FSU game.
Oh, man.
Awful. I'd gone to a costume party, so I didn't get to watch any college football that day.
Did you wear the Borat swimsuit?
Well, you know, that's for the adults only costume party. This was family friendly.
Oh, gotcha.
But no, the defense definitely looked lights out in the first half of the Arkansas game as well. I can't really speak on the second half of that game because I haven't reviewed the film, but you know, hats off to Pruitt and Richt. You know, that's coaching.
Yeah, it definitely is. And, you know, again, just to wrap on the whole defense and Coach Pruitt thing, I think the jury was out early in the season, and I think the jury is coming back now, and I think that he is definitely showing that his system is going to be one that's going to work well. I mean, you know, keep in mind, this is his first season, you know, at the helm as defensive coordinator. So there's still a lot of changes that are going to be, you know, implemented.
Keep in mind that he's lost his entire secondary.
Yeah, after, in fact, now that you mention it, we had Shaquille Jones, another DB, was removed from the team. This time it's because this player had gotten busted for shoplifting. He stole $43 worth of merchandise at a local Walmart. So he just pissed away his Georgia scholarship
for
43 bucks. He's going to end up, you know, at another SEC program. I think Louisville honestly did already come calling because Todd Grantham is there.
Well, yeah, Louisville, I was going to say, they're not SEC for one. And for two, you know, they can have our scraps. I'm good with that.
Yeah, but, you know, I am a little bit jealous. Todd Grantham has that that defense is ranked, like, in the top 5 in the country.
Who do they play again?
Yeah, you know, it's not SEC. So, but anyway, the whole takeaway from this thing, the loss to Todd Gurley, I mean, like I said, when we talked about it at first, I was just absolutely devastated, and I was upset at the fact that we lost Todd Gurley. I mean, he's an honest Heisman candidate at that point.
Legit, I mean, front runner, pun intended, for the Heisman.
He was looking to set all sorts of records. I mean, the career yards per carry, you know, at Georgia, more than Herschel Walker. All types of you know, accolades were gonna, you know, be owned by him, you know, at the end of this season, which is probably gonna be a decorated year for him and probably his last year, as you know, everybody assumes that he would have declared early for the draft.
So here's the thing I wanted to also highlight was I sent you the Grantland article that basically said Gurley did himself a favor. He didn't do any favors for the University of Georgia, but by basically deactivating himself until further notice with this scandal, not that he did it on purpose, but he gets to skip the rest of this year, so no wear and tear, no chance of injury, and who's to say he doesn't just go ahead and declare next year?
Yeah, you know, that's true.
Peace out.
That's true, and I mean, that's definitely something to consider, because, you know, the you know, I mean, it's a major injury is never that far away, especially when you're playing, you know, a position, you know, like he does at running back, and when you're a physical type of runner, you know.
Ask Marcus Lattimore how that last year worked out for him.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's the example, you know, is that you could end up being like Lattimore, you know, shred your knees, and that's it, man. You know, that's you know, nobody's gonna redshirt you anymore. Nobody's gonna help you recover from that. Best of luck to him, but I mean, you know, that's gonna be hard to come back from.
What kills me also is that it's $400, man. Like that's. Even if we can't,
it's trivial. You know,
it's
totally
so
trivial,
you know. And how much are they selling girly jerseys for?
$100
$100 a piece. That's what I'm saying, man. Like, get out of here. The since when is it okay to exploit players? I guess since the beginning of college football's heyday.
Pretty much.
I think Eric Cartman from South Park actually summed up the story pretty well. Let's go ahead and cut into our correspondent.
Well, let me get right down to it then. Like yourself, I'm also in the slave trade. But at the moment, I find myself in a little quandary with legal issues. Was wondering if you could share some secrets.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You have some mighty strong-looking workers here, sir. I'd be willing to offer you $40 for two of the white ones and $50 for the blacks.
Are you referring to our student athletes?
Student athletes. Oh, that is brilliant, sir. Now, when we sell their likeness for video games, how do we get around paying for our slave student athletes then?
Look, there are good reasons why our student athletes cannot be paid, young man.
I ain't arguing. If they got paid, then how'd we make all our money, right?
We do not own slaves, and we have no desire to own slaves.
But of course you own slaves because... Oh, right. Of course you don't have desire to own slaves, sir, neither do I. And if there was any government agency listening in on this here conversation, they should know that we're not talking about slave ownership at all. All right, so now how do you get around not paying your slaves?
Get out. This is a prestigious university, and I am not saying one more word to you.
You think you can do whatever you want just because your corporation is a university? This country was founded on the ideals that one corporation couldn't hog all the slaves while the rest of us wallow in poverty. Screw you, sir. I'm going home. Well, let me get right down to it then.
Exactly. You know, I think the talented writers, Trey Parker and Matt Stone, and I'm sure there's more on the roster now, they just hit the nail on the head with that episode.
You know, for sure. I mean, that's really what it boils down to, man. I mean, there's, you know, the very basics, you know, of this whole thing. It's just, you know, you can sell the likeness of all these players, whether it's through merchandise that's sold at the campus bookstore, or whether it's through selling the rights to the NCAA franchise, which is currently no longer making games because of the big Ed O'Bannon lawsuit. This is something that Jalen Rose and the rest of the Fab Five had talked about previously as well, is that, you know, everybody's making money off of these players except the players. And then everybody gets up in arms and they, you know, condemn the player for going and getting some, you know, some money. And a lot of times, here's the thing, a lot of times these players that are taking the money are the ones that don't have circumstances. That college scholarship, that football scholarship, is probably the only way they're ever going to go see a college campus. They don't have parents that are able to send them money, you know, when they don't have anything to eat. So for them, you know, it's a whole different story. You know, and they can't, being a sports player, being an athlete, they probably don't have as much free time to go and get like a part-time job or a full-time job.
I don't think they're even allowed to work. If you're a student athlete, I don't think you can accept a job.
And that's the thing. I mean, it's just, you know, is it right? You know, probably not. But does something need to be done? Definitely so. I mean, I think that's where it's at. I mean, what we're looking at, let's just say that the absolute worst happened. You know, the allegation, the rumor is that Gurley had several signing sessions and he got a couple $1,000s, like just under $2,000 for everything that he's done so far. I mean, that's nothing. That's less than 15 jerseys, you know, at the bookstore. And you're going to fault this dude for profiting off his likeness. I mean, you know, like Johnny Manziel or not, you know, he hit it. I think he hit it right, man. I mean, you know, let him profit off himself. I mean, that's what it's all about.
Johnny was suspended a half game for, and he was caught on audio straight up saying that
right.
I shouldn't even be doing this.
Yeah.
You know, there was more evidence, I think, than what has been exposed in this Todd Gurley situation. And to run it back a second, the student athletes are provided a $2,000 stipend to cover expenses that a traditional scholarship won't. So you're talking $2,000 for an academic year. Get out of here, man.
That's, you know, that's $200, less than $200 a month. And I mean, like you said, between practices and film sessions and all these other obligations that you might have, you probably can't get much more than a part-time job. And it's not like you're just being lazy otherwise. You know, I mean, these guys are training. You know, these guys are playing games, you know, that are wearing their bodies out. I mean, it's not fair to just say, well, you know, be like another student and get a job, you know, to get that extra cash flow. I mean, it's not an option for them.
Right. And I think the danger lies in, and we've talked about this before, if you're paying athletes, you know, at what point, and this has been brought to my attention this week, you know, what point are you then, when do you separate the academics from the athletics? You know, because they're, for the most part, let's be real here, the vast majority of student athletes, especially football athletes, are going to school to go to the professional leagues. They're right. not going to school to get a doctorate, you know, an advanced degree or even an undergraduate degree. No. Sure, you'll have the you know, the exceptions to the rule, Stanford, but for the most part,
Vanderbilt.
Exactly. You know, the Stanford of the South. You know, these kids aren't going to get the education. So
no,
if you start
going
paying,
to major in National Football League.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's it.
Exactly. So I mean, where do you then draw the line, or is there a line drawn, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the difficult thing is, and I've tried to seek out all sorts of different options as far as how do you better compensate these players. The dangerous thing is, if you just allow that to happen, then you're going to have, then it's going to become a battle of the boosters. So all of the power teams with all of the money will be able to basically do what SMU did, except do it over the table instead of under the table, and just funnel massive amounts of money, and then the recruiting game turns into a cash game.
It's the same way. It's like that now. You know, the you know what SEC stands for.
Yeah.
Straight earning cash. You know, the it is the war of the boosters already. I mean, look at A&M, their program joining the SEC, you know, that was a big impetus for a lot of spending, and they basically had a complete renovation to I can't even name their stadium, but I watched a video that was showing the updates, and man, it's posh, it's nice, man.
Oh, for sure.
It probably looks a lot like the University of Nike, I mean Oregon, dorm rooms.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing, you know, do we allow it to happen over the table, because we know good and well that a lot of this stuff happens under the table. So is it doing any harm by, it's like the whole legalization of marijuana. Everybody's using it, so why not find a way to better legislate it and control it, and maybe make a little tax money on top of that? I'm not saying make tax money on college sports, but you know what I'm saying. Like if you just call it what it is and treat it like it's actually happening, which it is, then you can try to better resolve the issues and regulate it.
Right. You can at least put all the information on the table for both parties to see, you know, opposing and championing, and maybe come to an even ground that benefits both parties. You know, in the case of the players not getting paid and having to find alternate means of sustenance, you know, I point to a case like Jamal Lewis, prolific running back at the University of Tennessee,
mm-hmm.
caught in a cocaine ring, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, financing and facilitating purchases of large amounts of cocaine, you know, because he's about that life.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's one thing or the other, you know, so hopefully something will change there, you know, and the NCAA will be able to find a better way to handle situations like this instead of the current way of just throwing the player under the bus damaging the universities that the player went to, and then calling it a wrap. I mean, because you already talked about Johnny Manziel and how he got suspended for a half. I mean, Jameis Winston hasn't been suspended yet.
Man, and in the light of what, rape allegations?
He's got much bigger issues, and he has yet to be, you know, to miss a game. Well, he missed, what was it? He missed a half.
A half, right. For the infamous now, her right in the comment that he made. How much do you think he stole? Here's the question, the burning question. Do you think he stole more than $43 worth of crab legs?
I'm sure he did.
I mean, king crab legs aren't cheap.
Hey, man, those things can be like $15 a pound.
That's what I'm saying.
So, I mean, yeah, things need to change. It's the bottom line. Yeah, I think that's the thing. And one more thing just to wrap this whole thing up. The irony behind this whole Todd Gurley situation and his autograph signings and all that, the NCAA rule against selling gear while playing in college actually had its beginnings at the University of Georgia.
Right, I remember
created,
that.
Yeah, they created that rule after Fred Gibson, a former receiver there, and eight of his teammates were caught selling their championship rings in 2003.
Word.
So it all comes full circle.
Doesn't it, though? And Fred Gibson was a tight receiver, man. Was that the was that David Green, 2003?
I think so. He was there for David Green, tail end of... Was he there at the tail end of Donnan? No. He was there. He was there during Coach Richt. But that was a, you know, that was a good squad. You know, that was a team that won the Sugar Bowl and sold their rings. And here we go.
And a game worn jersey.
Yeah, and 11 years later, the Georgia rule comes back to bite the Georgia Bulldogs.
AJ Green missed 4 games for selling a game worn jersey.
Yeah, and I mean, again, it just speaks on the bigger issue at hand, you know, as a compensation. And for everybody that wants to cry about, well, you know, these kids are getting, you know, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 scholarships per year. I mean, that's true. But if you want to call them out for that, let's look at the financial statements and let's see how much money that football program makes for the entire university. Because I know for a fact in the SEC, that's major money. That's a cash cow right there. That's funding your entire athletics program.
That's funding more than just that.
I mean, that's getting buildings built. That's getting stadiums built. That's getting facilities built. I mean, it's not, you know, let's not talk about, oh, we're giving the kids $80,000 a year. Come on, man. At the end of the day, when you got 100,000 people in them stands, how much money you think's getting made?
Exactly.
And not just off of ticket sales, man. Booster money.
Jersey sales?
Yeah. Jersey sales. Not by the players, but by the bookstore and the university.
Exactly.
I mean, that's all I got to say about it, man. It's something that needs to, you know, something needs to change in that whole landscape for sure.
So the 2003 team, while I have it up here, shouts out to Oconee County High School, Tyson Browning.
What up,
was
Tyson?
On that squad. Craig Lumpkin.
Former
running back. Big Ben Watson.
Tight end, University.
Currently a New Orleans Saint, I want to say. Is he a Saint?
Yeah, I think he's still in the league. He played Max, with the Patriots for a while.
That's right. Max Gene Gillis.
O-line.
Word.
Interior line.
Reggie Brown, one of my favorites.
Another receiver, right?
Yeah, he had a short cup of tea with the Eagles. I don't think he ever really panned out in the NFL, but he was dope at the University of Georgia. And Joe Tereshansky. Shout out to Joe.
Joe T.
Oconee County High School.
Another OCHS product right there. We had a nice little run.
Tony Taylor was on this team. Yeah, Tony Taylor. Yeah.
Tony was on the team. Didn't he make the Falcons?
He did. He was on the Falcons roster for about a year. Robert Gethers was on this team. There you go.
It's a solid squad, man.
Trey Battle, Greg Blue.
Greg Blue. Great name.
Great tackler.
He's still in the league.
Nah, man. He was. Nope. Oh, David Pollock. David Pollock was on this team. Word.
He's looking good. Thinned out. Doing some good work on the
SEC Network, right?
On the mothership. I think he's on ESPN.
Oh,
on
word. Espen. Well, Espen owns the SEC Network, right?
I don't know how that works out.
Man, so before we wrap this podcast, to sum up the Todd Gurley suspension, we didn't really lose a lot going to our favorite, Nick Bruiser.
Yeah, one of the great things that I saw was two females holding up a sign. One said, I used to be a girly girl. And the person next to him said, with a sign saying, now I'm a chubby girl.
That's right.
So it's, Georgia keeps on rolling on. You know, Todd Gurley's looking every bit the beast that we thought he would be when we were talking about him in the preseason, months ago. He's looking legit.
Shouts out to Nick Chubb. He ran for over 200 yards and 2 touchdowns against Arkansas.
He's run the ball nearly 100 times in 2 games. He's run it like 80 some, almost 80 times.
So you know what that means.
What's that?
That means that you could call the entire Razorback defense Chubb Chasers.
And
boom.
On that note, let's put a wrap on this one.
Word.
Thank y'all for tuning in once again. Episode 9. Man, we're getting in on the 10th. The 10th anniversary.
Closing in on double digits. Another milestone.
Oh, yeah.
We got our 50th like on our Facebook page.
Yeah. Thanks for reminding me on that. We want to shout out to Gary. Is it Finney Frock? He was our 50th like.
What up, Gary?
If you're listening, hit us up on the Facebook. Drop us a message on Twitter or something. And we'll give you some dues here. We also got a 51st like. I don't know how to pronounce this one either. Is it Shayla, Chelaa, Vega?
Yeah,
I think it's a catfish, though.
Shouts out to the catfish.
I think it's a catfish, though, but we'll see what happens.
You know what, Shayla? If you're not a catfish, go ahead and drop us a line. Prove us wrong.
Yeah. Show us you're more real than Manti Te'o's girlfriend.
Until then, I'm going to assume that you're a 400-pound dude who eats a lot of pizza and drinks a lot of Mountain Dew.
Sounds like me.
All right, y'all. Signing off. Peace out until the next episode. Catch us on Twitter at FCKPod or, hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/FreshCoastClick. Check us out on theclicknation.com.
Just check us out, man, and stay fresh, y'all.